He'd do anything to get back to his own place, where he's originally from. His wife, kids.
Sure, I understand.
This redoubt, I believe you called it. You honestly think El Chupacabras live inside?
Yeah, like I said before. I believe the bastards were cobbled together by some mad doctor working on some sick project. At the very least, they must have lived in here. Don't know if any are left or not.
Only one way to find out.
When the keyed-in code admitted them, Ryan stepped past the doorway. The layout inside was functional and to the point. Stripped barracks with skeletal bed frames and empty footlockers, a closed-out kitchen, the cabinets barren of foodstuff, utensils, anything not nailed down. Long-lived auto circuits clicked into life, causing the overhead strip light panels to flare as the group made its way down the main level to the single elevator car at the end of the hallway. The heavy steel entry door to a stairwell left of the elevator was crumpled as if hit by a massive battering ram. The door had been hurled across the hall and lay ripped from its mounting hinges. JB ran a hand along the twisted metal.
Somebody wanted out in a powerful hurry.
The front of the ruined door that had been on the inside of the stairs was covered in jagged scratches, some light and quick like the tracks of a domestic tabby, others deep and long, like the aftermath of an enraged Bengal tiger.
Or something. See if you can fetch us a ride, Dean.
Right, Dad.
Dean stepped past JB and the stairwell door to the front of the elevator. He pushed the call button, but the plastic activation disc mounted in the steel plate to the right of the elevator doors remained dim. He tried it a second and third time, pressing with all of his might, and still received no satisfaction.
Elevator's out. Must be busted.
Not like elevators. Make me nervous.
Memories of previous elevator escapades went through Ryan's mind, including one precarious escape from a stalled car that had hung between floors, suspended over nothingness. They'd been able to exit via the ceiling hatch, but then were faced with a lengthy climb up an emergency shaft ladder, after which the only exit to the top floor was guarded by snipers.
I can't say I care much for elevators either, Jack. Jamais-vu said there were power problems here with the nuke gen. Might be why the elevator isn't working. No choice in the matter. I guess we walk. I'll take the point.
Then a weight fell on Ryan's shoulders. He felt long, crooked fingers try to grab onto his face, sneaking claws toward his nostrils, his mouth, even a small hooked claw that tried to insinuate itself into the empty socket behind the tooled leather of his eye patch. Hot breath blasted on his neck like an open flame, and visions of vampires skittered through his brain. Ryan didn't frighten easily, but the cold sweat of fear involuntarily popped out on his brow. Dropping his blaster, he reached up with both hands to snatch the animal who'd fallen on top of him. His gloved fingers found purchase on a series of quill-like appendages sticking out of his attacker, and he used them to lift and hurl the beast to the floor. Two of the razor-sharp quills cut through the leather of his gloves and into his fingers and palms, but Ryan ignored the bite of pain to rid himself of the animal. Landing upright, the creature flapped a pair of wiry arms and skittered across the floor, half running and half hopping with a seeming clumsy agility and speed. A pair of powerful hind legs assisted in the quick, rapid motions the creature was making as it scurried away. Like many of the other mutations Ryan had glimpsed or come face-to-face with in the Deathlands, this one possessed a pair of glowing red eyes and a softly hissing mouth filled with sharply pointed teeth. Pupils of a pale yellow-green were slitted dots within the centers of the red. The drawing Soto had shown him back in the cafe hadn't begun to illustrate just how ugly and frightening El Chupacabras truly was. The beast's head was oval, with a strong lower jaw. Small holes served as a nose, and like Stickies, the mutie had no ears. Two small arms ended in three-fingered clawed hands. The powerful hind legs also had three claws, and Ryan took note of the bat wings under the creature's arms, much wider and sturdier looking than in the illustration. Soto's round face flushed with excitement.
El Chupacabras!
Both of Jack's slugs caught the creature high in the chest. And while the force from the shots drove the Chupacabras back for a second or two, it still kept coming, silently, eerily, with eyes of glowing crimson lit by the darkest of inner fires. Dean chose to unleash his own firepower, throwing his Browning high power and cocking and firing the blaster in a single fluid motion. The round was useless for any kind of long-range shooting, but at a mere 20 feet from the target, the payload the Browning delivered on impact was utterly devastating. When the bullet hit the freakish mutie, it struck with piledriver force. The Chupacabras' head was obliterated in a cloud of wet, gruen bone, leaving behind a stump of a neck that spouted pinkish blood, even as the body continued to be propelled forward by sheer momentum.
Ting runs round like chicken with head cut off.
JB kicked out with a booted foot and halted the now headless creature's charge.
Got news for you, Jack. This sure as hell ain't no chicken.
I didn't expect them to be so tiny.
What's the deal, Soto? That little thing couldn't have been over 2 feet tall. You mean to tell me the entire island's been hiding in fear of that?
No. You misunderstand, Ryan Carter. This Chupacabras is a mere child. A baby.
Oh.
Christy ran her hand along one of Ryan's stubbled cheeks and wiped away a red smear.
You're bleeding, lover. Claw must have got you on the way down.
Ryan pulled off one of his tight-fitting black gloves, revealing additional superficial cuts on the top and heel of his left hand.
Spine's cut me, too. Who's carrying the first aid and playing medic this trip?
Me.
Jack reached back into the pack slung over one shoulder. The albino removed a tightly wound bundle of cotton gauze and a roll of white adhesive tape. Ryan winced as Jack sprayed a stream of hissing antiseptic from a small med can onto his exposed hand.
These goat suckers. Any poisons or toxins in the spines?
Soto knelt at the corpse, using the muzzle of his long blaster to poke at the creature's exposed underbelly.
I hope not.
You're a lot of help.
I answer true, girl. I don't think these spines are poison, but I don't know for sure. I never tried to find out, if you know what I mean.
You test subject, Ryan.
Jack grinned, showing off sharp-looking teeth as he wrapped the gauze around Ryan's head.
How you feel?
Felt better, but felt a lot worse. Don't feel sick or poisoned.
JB glanced at the albino's handiwork on Ryan's injuries.
Looks like Jack has the makings of a decent field medic. If Millie doesn't watch out, she'll be out of a job.
Phew. Tough for you. Not share your bed.
Although amused, Dean remained alert, his Browning high power cocked and ready to shoot if more firepower was needed. Ryan held a hunk of the remaining gauze to his bleeding face. Jack had offered to attach a pad with some of the white adhesive tape, but Ryan told him no. The bleeding was already starting to ease.
All right, let's go on down.
Deathlands, 2095. Doc Tanner came to his senses in the middle of what he believed to be the worst fog he'd ever encountered in his life. And how long was that life? 30 years or 100 years? An unruly mass of days and decades, and he neither cared to nor could he keep count. He was flat on his stomach in the dirt, now in a world whose floor had been jerked out from beneath his feet. Somehow he'd managed to gather up his clothing and dress himself, but having lost track of time long ago, he had no real concept of how long he'd been stumbling down the treacherous mountain path. Chunks of his conscious mind, along with his immediate short-term memory, were missing, as if sliced away by a butcher's blade and discarded in some charnel pit. Even worse, there were a few times he knew for certain, or at least as certain as he could be in his addled state, that he'd blacked out while trying to stagger along his chosen path in the damp mist. The last memory he could pull up from his brain was that of Emily. In the memory, the hour was early, perhaps 7 in the morning. He'd dined on poached eggs, crisp bacon, and day-old bread recovered from the previous night's meal that had been toasted to disguise its origins. He and Emily were standing at the front door of his home, and she was nagging at him in a pleasant tone to not be late, as they were expecting her parents for supper. Emily was still in her nightclothes, covered by a filmy pink robe for modesty's sake. However, for some reason, the robe wasn't tied around her middle, her more than ample middle. The belt wasn't long enough, he supposed, since her frame was normally so petite. In fact, Blessed Emily was getting quite the gut on her, but Doc was so happy he didn't care. She gave him a kiss on the cheek, and he stepped through the front door of the apartment, and everything appeared normal. Except he didn't recall Emily being so overweight.
By the three Kennedys, Emily was pregnant.
Pregnant with their first child? Their second? Doc had no clue. The apartment? They hadn't lived there in how many years? Before Rachel was born, yes. That much he was sure of. And when her young face appeared in his mind's eye, Doc felt an almost inconsolable, unbearable tidal wave of wrenching pain and loss inundate his entire being. All around him, the fog was growing heavier, but Doc didn't notice in the slightest, since he was weighted down by an even heavier fog from within. Night and day and another night passed as he stumbled along, sleeping when he was tired, hungry beyond imagining, but he never seemed to black out for very long. He was found face down on the broken tarmac of an old highway, his skull coming close to being